It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. We're kind of coming into the tail end of the Coming Out Lounge. As you all know, we're going to be rebranding the podcast to Life Uncloseted so we can tell more of those closet stories and help people make those big, bold moves to go live their life uncloseted. And this is why I wanted to bring this particular guest back. He's actually a repeat offender. Yes, he's been here before. He's an awesome guy. He loves to talk about improv communication, helping people get through some of the craziest stuff in their lives, just communicating and truly standing in the moment and going, okay, here I am. So how am I going to improvise in this moment? His name is Mike Ganino. He's a rising star in the speaking world. He's a good buddy of mine. I love what he does in all sorts of things, from his improv to culture change to being an actor. And he's ready to dive right in here with us today on the Coming Out Lounge as we talk about going through some of those moments in life and going, okay, I'm just going to dance in the moment. I'm going to improv my way through here and get some really strong communication going. So let's bring my buddy Mike Ganino back to the lounge. Hey, Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, hi. Thanks for I'm excited to be a double offender.
You are a double offender. It's rare that I do that. So, I mean, you probably, once we launch Life Uncloseted, I bet you'll be a triple offender. So,
anyway, so
let's just dive right in, man. One of the things that you have done, and I know you do really well because I've seen you in action, I've seen some of your talks and everything, is you really bring the art of communication and the art of improv together. And what got you just marrying those two things together? I know you're an improv guy, so that was part of it. But what really started bringing all this together as you learned to put this in people's hands to help them as they communicate through tough stuff?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's so funny. I've been doing improv since I was about 20 years old. I started studying at Second City and then UCB and on and on and on, all the schools. I've been to all the schools. And I never really thought about it from a outside of theater perspective. It was always about creating something funny. And one time when I was running a restaurant company, because I also came from the hospitality world, I realized that the folks that we were working with in the office, there were only about 13 of us. Everyone was awesome. Everyone was great. Everyone cared about each other. But there was something going on where they weren't on the same page. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, I wonder if we could use some of this stuff that we do in improv to help everybody get on the same page, to help everybody listen better to each other, to help everybody learn to be able to contribute to each other's ideas. And then I looked it up, of course, and I realized there's a whole thing about business improv, and a lot of the schools offer it. But I went really, really deep, and I really started studying. I went to the textbooks. I studied psychology of communication, collaboration, and married the two about how improv is really, you know, in the course of corporate, I get called a lot to do team building activities. And I would say that improv is really not a team building activity. It's a bottom line result getting activity. Because it helps with all of that. And of course, there's all of the, you know, I do a ton of workshops for people where we're using improv in their life. I teach improv for public speakers, which helps people do better interviews, better panels, better on stage. I've done improv for social anxiety, where I teach people who have social anxiety how to use improv to overcome that. Improv for networking, which is something I do a lot for conferences. And so there's a lot of like uses for this skill set that we learn as improvisers.
And what I love about it, Mike, is you bring a couple of things right to the forefront. So the bottom line for getting results is a huge one. But then the social anxiety thing is huge, especially as you and I both know as gay men, that whole coming out process, getting to who we are. And then, and actually the reason Mike is back is he wrote a really cool article not long ago about his own coming out experience and how he shows up in the world. This is where the social anxiety stuff just continues to show up. And I know for many people who are listening, one of the things that they kind of go through is, okay, so I come out. Well, yeah, but you never stop. And that's why your article really kind of struck a chord, because it is about finding the ways to do this coming out over and over and over again. So when you're in those moments, I know it's one of those, even in the article you said, so, you know, when somebody says, so, you know, are you married? What did you do with your, you know, your spouse and kids? Da, da, da. It's kind of in that moment, the improv kind of jumps up, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting too. So I wrote this article about being a leader and how we need great role models. And so for me, I choose to come out every chance I can.
Yep.
I feel like somewhere there's probably someone watching who's trying to find a role model. And there's still a ton of data, even in 2017, that says that a lot of gay people don't feel comfortable talking about their relationships. And I'm not talking, you don't need to get into like the nitty gritty. I don't want to hear right. about anyone's nitty gritty, but to be able to say that you went on a date or that you have a spouse, people feel uncomfortable. Something like 70% of gay people feel like they shouldn't talk about it at work.
Right.
We got to change that. And so for me, that being willing to just have the conversation in the first place when somebody says, what does your wife think about that? Or are you bringing your wife on your vacation? Or, wow, you must have a lot of girlfriends or something. That is the very first step at being able to kind of do something about it. And so for me, that's always a moment to improvise because you have to take in all of the context. Where are you? What might be an appropriate way to do it? Because I also don't want to be, I don't know, like I don't want to be a gay militant, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to hello, be like, high five. You and I are both right there, man.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, how dare you assume? I don't want to be that person because I feel if I can embrace people and bring them along with me, I have a better chance of changing the world or at least changing their opinion of what it is. And so I tend to look around the context and say, what would be the most appropriate way for me to have this conversation? Often it's the most simplest way. You know, it's often just saying, oh, I actually don't have a girlfriend or I don't have a wife. I have a husband. And a lot of times people then, you know, I could tell a lot of times they just feel guilty and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Right.
But it really is improvising because you need to take in all the context to figure out what's the right way to do it in this setting. And I almost always choose to do it. I just make a choice about what the right way is.
So here's something I find really interesting, and you and I come from that same space. So I'm going to give my own example, which if you've listened to the podcast before, you've heard this story a few times, but the improv moment happened for me in my kids' elementary school when they first started going to the local elementary school here in Riverside. And I remember going in there, I was working with a lot of the, you know, moms in the classroom because I'm a work at home dad. So I have free time to go help out. And I remember one of the moms saying to me, so what did you and your wife do this weekend? And I said, well, my husband and I went wine tasting this weekend. And I just kept going. I didn't like, let's stop. Let's make an issue of this. Let's just, you know, it was being in the moment. You know, now was there like, okay, let me stand up and wave the rainbow flag? No, it was like, this is just what it is. It really was beautiful because it was kind of that moment where they're just kind of like, okay, we got new information here, but okay, let's get back to what we're doing. And it actually kind of set the tone for us being just really welcome for the most part in that arena. I don't remember my kids ever really having any issues in school and stuff because we were always just kind of open. It wasn't, let's go throw this in people's faces, but let's not hide from it either. So let's kind of talk about that anxiety piece. When someone's really experiencing anxiety, what would be something from an improv perspective you would kind of throw at them to kind of help them go, okay, let's kind of break through this?
The biggest thing that you have to do in improv, so if you've never seen an improv show on a stage, a lot of times people think of Saturday Night Live or Whose Line Is It Anyway? But if you go to a theater and see a show, what it is usually a room, usually a pretty dank, crappy room because it doesn't make a lot of money, improv theater. And so it's usually a room with a plain black stage with nothing on it but chairs. And so everything we're doing, if we're going to be in a scene in a coffee shop, we're going to be miming the fact that we're in a coffee shop
right.
and doing something called object work. And so what's really important in an improv scene is that I'm really paying attention to you, that I'm very present and I'm very aware of now because I can't miss the fact that you're making a latte versus pouring a draft beer. I have to pay attention to that because the audience is. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not listening to you, if I'm not really present and aware, then I can't do that. So the very first thing I always recommend to people and some of what we focus on in my social anxiety class is really stop planning the conversation and focus on what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. Most social anxiety comes from two things. One is planning for something that isn't even real. And so you're planning a conversation, even you're coming out. I think I said this on the first show when I was on last time about you got to stop planning what the other person might say because that's stopping us from moving forward. Because it's scary. You know,
it is scary.
And it's often not as bad as we assume.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing is stop planning the conversation.
Nice.
Part of what you can do there is to say, what do you believe about yourself and about this other person that's making you do that anyway? And explore those beliefs and decide if they're actually real. The second thing to do is to really be able to know what to do next. A lot of times why people have social anxiety is because they don't know Am I interesting enough? Do I have enough to say? What should I do? And the thing about a conversation, a great conversation, a great communication, is that it's two ways.
Right.
Communication is not just about what I'm spitting out to you. It's about what's going on. What's our body language? How are we making eye contact? How are we feeling together? And so the second thing that I see a lot happen is that people are uncomfortable in social settings, uncomfortable coming out because they don't know what to say next.
Yep.
And if you rid yourself of that and say, well, my job is just to say one piece, and then you're going to say something, and then based on whatever you say, I'll just add on to it. There's something in improv called yes and. Mm-hmm. And that's something that if you kind of, I don't know, if you read a Tina Fey book or watched any of these new people who started in improv make it really big, then you'll have heard yes and. The idea for yes and is not that you have to like what the other person said. It's that you have to agree with that being their reality. You have to say, okay, you just said that, so that must be real for you. So what do I do to add on to that? And the and part isn't saying that if you say, somebody says, well, I hate that you're a gay person, that you have to say, yes, and I'm also, you know,
right.
And yes, and I also hate it. You don't have to do that. But you can accept that that's how they feel, right? Mm-hmm. You can agree with that being the reality. And then you can use and as a bridge for both of you. Yep. So if somebody said, well, I really don't believe with gay people, then I could say, oh, I understand that you feel that way. I know a lot of people do. And I'm curious, what experiences have you had before? So instead of taking it back to be about me and how I feel about coming out, I'm turning it back and saying, well, let's explore what you just said. So the first thing is to be present, to actually focus on what's happening here. And the second is to use yes and to say that you're never responsible for 100% of the conversation. If you can just listen and then contribute to whatever the other person said, those two things alone are really the cornerstone of that social anxiety piece. And, you know, I've never done a workshop like this. This could be a really interesting thing to do for like a college campus or even high schools these days, to do some improv work around coming out. Mm-hmm. Because those two things would help people with the conversations we have in our heads about the coming out conversations.
So here's what's interesting. I'm going to reveal a little dirty dark secret between Mike and I, and it's not, don't go to the gutter, folks. This whole conversation that Mike and I are having, we didn't really know where we were going to go today. This is all pretty much improv. We had some slight little exchanges about, hey, what if we did an improv thing? We talked about communication stuff, but there is, I think we had a conversation for like 2-3 minutes before we turned the microphone on. And it's about just responding and doing, as Mike said, this yes and realizing, even though I'm the host, I don't have to carry 100% of this conversation. I'm letting Mike contribute as much as I am, because what we're trying to do is be in the moment right now and play off of each other. So I know for me, the yes and thing is huge, because what I learned about myself, Mike, was I have a tendency to, as soon as somebody starts saying something, then I'm starting to plan what I'm going to say in response instead of going, okay, let's really hear them, and then go, okay, yes, I hear you, which you don't have to literally say that. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you have to say, here's what I heard you say, you know, especially if you're trying to do non-combative communication stuff, but then really let it land. And what I think makes so many of us uncomfortable is as soon as somebody finishes saying something, we feel like we have to jump right in. We have to say something immediately. We haven't allowed it to land. And because we don't allow it to land, we don't feel comfortable in the quiet or the silence that happens when we just let something land. Instead, we're rushing forward to try to respond to something instead of, okay, let's really think about, what would I really like to say right now? How can I acknowledge what somebody else said? And how can I be in that moment? And I know when it's charged, like a coming out conversation, it's really, really, really hard to slow down and just let something land and let it be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so interesting that, you know, I think most of the time when people are communicating, one of the ways when I work with organizations, I'll just watch a meeting. Mm-hmm. You can figure out so much about it by watching 8 people interact. You can learn so much about the way the company operates. You don't need to look at anything else. You don't need to look at policies or workbooks or anything. You can see. And one of the things I see so often in that setting, and I try to study it when I'm just in person, but it's sometimes weird when you're at a bar and you're watching people talk and they're like, why is this dude staring at us?
Right.
So one of the things I think is interesting that's totally about what you were saying is most of the time people are communicating with a personal agenda. Mm-hmm. They're trying to drive the conversation towards something.
Yep.
There's somewhere they want to go. There's a belief that they have, and they're trying to validate that belief versus really taking the conversation as a chance to learn what's up for the other person. And I don't know, I've gotten myself into a lot of trouble, Rick. I've been invited places I have no reason to be. I have no grounds to be at some of the conferences and some of the meetings I go to, but I show up and I just listen and I try to add to the conversation that's happening versus taking it in another way that I want it to go. You know, I think so often, like what you were saying about somebody listening and only really listening so that they can respond versus listening to understand, is that we're just so used to trying to sell our idea because we're so used to not being heard.
Yeah.
And it's like a vicious cycle. Like, I'm not being heard, so I'm going to not listen to you. You don't feel heard, so you're not going to listen to me. And we're both just talking at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I was at a conference just in the past week at World Domination Summit. And one of the workshops I led was alternative sexualities and relationships. And what I found to be so interesting in that workshop was 90% of the people that showed up for that workshop felt like they weren't being heard in what they were trying to communicate. And this is a workshop about being gay, lesbian, bi, trans, in polyamorous relationships. The bulk of it was about being in a polyamorous relationship. And it wasn't necessarily about being heard with their partner. It was about being heard by people in general about, here's why we're living this particular life. And as I was presenting with my co-presenter, I started realizing, because that happened really early in the workshop, that, you know, we asked the question, what is the thing that you feel like most holds you back from being your most authentic self in an alternative relationship or in your sexuality, sexual identity? And the first person that responded said, I feel like I'm not being heard. So in that moment as a presenter, it helped ground me, like, to immediately go, okay, this was a signal for me to, like, really make sure throughout this whole thing now I'm really listening and hearing these people, because we're going to go into some really scary stuff more than likely. You know, for some of these people, it may be the first time they've talked about their feelings or their relationships or whatever in public like that. And it was really powerful as we stepped back. And there was a lot of times that, you know, I even nudged my co-presenter at one point. I said, let's make sure we let the silence happen, because some of these people are really going to be going through some of this in their head and really experiencing, I'm admitting this is who I am, this is the kind of life I'm leading, blah, blah, blah. It could have been their very first time doing that. So you've been out for quite a few years, as we talked about, you know, in our last conversation, but as you continue to grow into all the beautiful, cool stuff you're doing, I mean, before we came on the air, Mike was talking about, he's got like 5 big gigs coming up in the fall here. And as you continue to walk into those cool places professionally, what are some of the challenges of being a gay man? Anything in particular?
You know, sometimes, I mean, this is the really, you know, just a baseline thing, you know, because I'm somebody who always is about, I'm okay taking risks, and I assume everyone is on my side and all of that. But I mean, sometimes you're literally in places where you might physically be unsafe.
Yep.
And so I don't want to get any haters from specific states, so I'm not going to mention them.
Yeah, no, but I know where you're talking of, because I've seen your posts. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, good luck, brother.
And sometimes, like, in the backwoods, like, some of these corporate offices where I'll go speak are far from the city center. So even in some of the states that tend to be a little more conservative, often when you're doing corporate work, if you're doing conference work, you're almost always in the city because they need to make it easy for people to get to. But corporate work, you're often, you know, not in major cities. And so I live in Los Angeles, you know, right in the middle of it all. I lived in Chicago before. But sometimes I'm in a place where going out to dinner is like, oh, wait a second, how do I do this? I have that internal struggle of, do I downplay me? What do I do? And so, you know, I typically go, I buy myself a lot, so nobody asks, but it almost always happens. You sit at the bar alone to grab dinner, even if you're like at a place like Outback or something, which is the best option I could find recently. And, you know, the bartender wants to ask you, oh, what are you doing here? And I have a wedding ring on. So then that becomes something of like, I think I look younger than I am.
Yeah.
But certainly my hair makes me look younger than I am.
Yeah. And you'll understand the hair reference, folks, when you see the picture of Mike on the show page, because it stands straight up in a very cool way. But that in and of itself could be something that, like, I mean, puts people like, okay, who is this person?
Yeah. So for me, I just have to say, you know, in that setting, do I care? Or am I really, if I'm in the restaurant at the hotel, then I don't care. because I just walk up to my room. But if I have to go outside and get in a car, I do think about it because this still exists for us, the safety thing. So, and I think that's the first thing. Even when I teach improv in a theater setting, we go through safety because people are creating. People feel very free to touch each other. Mm-hmm. People feel very free to go after each other because it's like, well, I'm making art, so I could do anything. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I always do is I say, well, let's talk about what safety means. Let's talk about what consent means because that matters even in art.
Yep.
And so sometimes I think about that when I'm traveling. That's one of the very simple safety things. The other challenge I think I have sometimes is, and I just have to be okay with it, is the learning the lesson that you're not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if I was ever doing an event where somebody, you know, didn't like my Instagram or didn't want me to link to my life, I'm very public. I mean, part of being a communications speaker and a communication trainer is that everything we do communicates. You know, being authentic is about communication. And so I have one event that I've turned down, not an event, a corporate gig that I turned down because they wanted me to maybe play that down. I made a website for it. They wanted me to host the video separately than the rest of my stuff. And I just wouldn't do it because I can't be on that stage unsafe. I have a friend, not a friend, I have a former teacher, mentor, Susan Messing, who's a big, big Chicago improv guru. And in improv, in theater, there's something called blue shows, which are the ones that are a little raunchier, a little more like curse words and stuff like that. And she always says that if the theater has a no kid policy, it has to be a no kid policy because the second a kid comes into the theater, it affects the art that's happening in one of those shows. In a late night show, somebody brings their kid, it changes it. And so if I was on stage really, really being too caught up in me because I was worried about what I might say that's going to make this event planner mad, then I'm no longer serving the audience. So those are the two things I think that have affected me.
Yeah. And, you know, I recently had an experience too where I had something very similar happen to the point that it's made me feel very uncomfortable that I tend to be like a big flirt. I flirt with everybody. Okay.
No.
Yes. And I have fun with it. And it just so happened that part of this flirting ended up just turning into a really bad situation where somebody took huge offense to it as if I was really trying to pick up on this person. And I'm like, I really now realize how this can get out of control. And so I learned a lot about myself in this. And yet I go, but that's part of my authenticity. That's part of me being who I am. But it also helped me see, okay, we're still not in some places yet where this is completely acceptable, which I find so interesting because on the flip side, as this is happening, I'm surrounded by a whole bunch of typical heterosexual men who are doing this to women simultaneously. And I'm like, this just, it's crazy, but it makes you very hyper aware of how you show up because you and I both have some pretty, you know, we're pretty well known in our circles and out in the world, we're getting more and more notice. It can turn really quickly. So everything you say, everything you do is kind of under the microscope at times. It can be kind of scary. But it's also very fun to be able to go, okay, this is who I am and just go be it and not let it hold you back. So back to the kind of this whole communication thing, let's just kind of put a hypothetical out there before we wind up everything here today. So let's say that somebody's really deep in the heart of this anxiety and like, okay, I'm going to come out, or maybe I'm out, but I'm going to go to the next layer of coming out. Maybe I'm going to be a little more open at work and everything. How do they tap into this improvisational sort of space where they can just be in that moment? And I know we've touched on several things already, but let's just kind of put them right there. They're in the work environment and they're going to kind of come out to some of the, you know, coworkers or maybe even a boss. How do they tap their, like, let's just be in the moment?
Sure. I think the first thing is really to be in the moment. And so I don't know that it's a natural conversation to walk up to someone and be like, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm gay.
Right. Exactly.
Versus really thinking through what are some of the instances, what are some of the times when this comes up, where might I explore this? And even saying maybe there are a few people that you want to come and tell. I'm a big fan of taking risks, but I think you take small risks. Go to the supportive people first and say, hey, I want to talk to you about something. Can we go grab coffee? And say, hey, the thing I want to talk to you about is this, and then plan nothing else.
Yep.
Just that first line, and then whatever they say, you just keep yes-anding. Mm-hmm. And again, yes-anding is accepting that the other person said whatever they said, and for them, that's a reality for some reason, and then contributing to it by going deeper, by making an observation, by adding another detail that allows you to explore this world and this conversation. So that's, I mean, I don't know. I think we can make it really If I had somebody for 8 weeks, we would do a much longer thing. But I think if you're just listening to this and you're thinking, how do I get started? I would say the first thing is really, really focus on being present and aware. Really focus on what's actually happening. There's something I remember hearing at Second City when I was there called play the scene you're in. Not the one you want to be in. So you have to be in this scene. So if you and I were doing theater and I said, hey, I can't believe we've made it to this space shuttle, you know, Dr. Bill.
Right.
You would have then say, we're not in a space shuttle. We're in my office.
Right.
And it would be like, well, now that's not the scene we're in. So you would have to play the scene and be like, yes, I brought you up here because I wanted to show you something, you know, whatever the case is. And then we keep adding bits and bits and bits until we fill this out. That same thing happens in our personal conversations where we're not playing the scene we're in because we're having anxiety over what might happen next, what they might say, who they might tell.
Right.
You got to just play the scene you're in and focus on what's actually happening now, not planning the conversation. The second step would be take small risks, pick some of the folks you think are going to be supportive and start with the easy ones and just build your confidence. It's like a muscle, and improv is like a muscle. You don't do it once and get great. You do it all the time and get better. And I think coming out is the same way. I think for you and I, Rick, it's probably, you know, and I think we both said today, it's second nature where if somebody says wife, we correct with husband and we move on. It's not a big deal. We just keep going. For some people, that's hard. And so what I say is we've built that up over time. For me, I don't know, 19 years. How long for you since you came out?
It's been almost that long too. Yeah. Close to that time. Yeah.
So we've had a lot of reps.
Yeah.
So take small risks if you're out there listening and you're thinking, where do I start? Go to someone who's going to be supportive, have a little coffee thing and practice your yes and, which is you say something and then they say something and then you say yes to whatever they did and you just add and contribute. So those two steps, yes and, are really about agree with their reality. You don't have to like what they said and then contribute something to the conversation. Don't take the conversation in a new way. The big mistake people make there is, you know, if you said something to me to say, yeah, that's wow. Thank you for telling me that you're coming out. I don't really know any gay people. I don't really know any other gay people. A lot of people think a yes and means to say, oh, well, I know lots of gay people. That's not a yes and. That's a yes but. I'm saying yes to what you said and then taking the conversation another direction versus saying, oh, wow, I'm really surprised by that. You know, how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. Yes and is about going deeper on the thing you're talking about with somebody. Yeah. I think that's a starting place for folks.
I agree. I agree 100%. And I think where we all get in trouble is, I'm going to kind of bring Mike and I's speaking stuff into play here is, yes, speakers rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. We know our material, or if you're good, you know your material really well. But you also know that at any given moment in that speech, something can happen and you got to be prepared to be able to dance in the moment. And I know that each time I go on a stage or I'm in front of a group, I'm literally saying to myself, just you're in the moment, start dancing. And I think when we think about preparing to come out, we can rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. And when I'm working with clients about, you know, okay, how do you want to have these coming out conversations? It's like, I want you to know the main things you want to communicate to people. And then I kind of want you to let it all go and just be in the moment. Because our brains are such beautiful things that based on what people will say or things that will happen, you'll be given the right information in the moment that you need to contribute when it comes up. I think the over-rehearsal is what gives us so much anxiety. And then we start feeling afraid about coming out to people and all this sort of stuff, which just know what you want to communicate. You know, I was just doing this with a client the other day. I said, okay, here's what I hear you saying. You want to communicate that you love the people that you're getting ready to tell, that the only reason you can explain to them that you waited so long was you just didn't feel safe. And you would like them to be able to see you as the same person that you've always been with this one twist. Great. There's your three talking points. Mm-hmm. Know them inside and out. Yes, there's going to be some anger. There's going to be some disappointment because of, you know, you were married and you're coming out. That's all going to be part of it. But in those moments, and, you know, Mike and I hadn't even had this conversation, it's in those moments that then the yes ands can start showing up. But know the three things that are most important to you, and then kind of like wash your hands and go, okay, those are my three things. Now let's just be in the moment.
I love that framework. What a great framework that is for kind of in the theater world, we always talk about kind of discovering what you want. And that's a great way to say, here's what I want from this. And we'll just figure out how to get there. Love that.
And for each person, the three things are going to be their unique three things. You know, I had one client once who she said, I've always communicated big things with my friends and family through email. And I said, then great. There's thing number one. This is how you're going to do it. Let's not go reinvent the wheel. But what is it you want to, you know, what do you want them to know? And she said, well, the first thing I want them to know is I'm okay and this is just a new part of my journey. I said, great. And then what else? I love you, and I hope you can still see your way to love me just for who I am. I said, cool, that's number two. And what's the third one? She goes, well, I've always shared stuff with people and said, you know I do this in group mode. I share with all the people at one time, but I want them to know that if they have questions, I'll be glad to talk. I said, great, now you've got your three things. You just did it. So let's just do it. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's step right into your framework that you always do to do this. And it's so interesting because I think all of us, when we have these big life moments, like, okay, so how should I do this? You already have it in you to do it. Mm-hmm. A mutual friend of ours, Tamsin Webster, who I've been working with on my speaking and stuff, her and I really landed on something really kind of cool about my brand. She's like, you know, the one thing you do really well, Rick, is you help people see that what's in their closet is exactly what's going to help them come out of their closet. They already have everything in their closet to come out and do it. They just, we don't see it because we get hyper in our heads and go, okay, now we got to do everything different. No, you don't really have to do anything different. You just be who you are. So, well, buddy, it's been almost 30 minutes. I'm so glad you showed up. What's something you'd love to leave people with as we like exit out of the lounge and get on with our days? Just something that might inspire people to just keep moving forward, doing the thing they do, helping them. It could be some more improv stuff, or maybe just something from your own personal experience about coming out and being who you are.
Wow. You know, I think as people, and this, I guess, ties to the improv stuff, but it's definitely a mic thing. We are what we communicate. Mm-hmm. We are what we communicate. And if you think about communicate beyond just the words you say, to the presence you have, to the stuff you put out there, the world listens to us. Yep. And sometimes people misinterpret us, or sometimes our messaging is a little off with how the world sees things, but you are what you communicate. So get intentional about it. Get thoughtful about it. Make sure that what you're putting out there is how you want to be known. Mm.
That's a beautiful place to like wrap it up. So, hey, buddy, I so appreciate you being here once again, being a repeat offender. I know you'll be another repeat offender soon once we launch Life Uncloseted. And just thanks for sharing yourself and being a bright light in the world, man.
Thank you so much. It was a blast, and congrats on wrapping this chapter and going into the new one. I'll be following along.
Cool, man. Thanks so much. Appreciate you. All right, closet dwellers and closet busters, that's it. We're wrapping it up this week. Another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for always being a listener. And something that would help us really get this podcast out in the world to reach more people who could probably use this kind of support to know that they're not alone would be if you would be willing to go out there and give us a beautiful rating and review on whatever platform that you're listening to the podcast, be it iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you are interacting with us on the Coming Out Lounge. That would be awesome. Also, if you would share it with people, send it in a link via email. Do it from your iPhone. If you're listening to podcasts on your iPhone, there's a share button right there that you can make this happen. And the reason for that is we want to get this thing out there where more and more people can listen to it. Also, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, would like to ask a particular question to be answered on the air, please give us a ring at 949-371-8559, 949-371-8559, or email me at rick@rickclemons.com, rick@rickclemons.com, and that's Clemons, C-L-E-M-O-N-S. We'd love to hear from you. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, that guy that helps you make those big, bold moves in life to go do the thing you're meant to do. Take care, everyone, and have a great week.